episode 168. I'm not actually sure, of the Bronx Beat podcast. I'm your host, EJ Fagan. Tonight, I'm joined by Scott Moss again.
Hey, whatever number it is, happy to be here.
Yeah, you know, I usually check before the podcast, and you know, it's one of those 160s. So don't be surprised when you see the episode. We got some fun stuff to talk about. We're very excited for this episode. We have a little game we're going to play that Scott and I have been preparing for like a week now. But we have some news to start off with, and that is the Yankees re-signed CC Sabathia for a one-year, $8 million deal. Scott, was this a good signing?
I have two minds. I think generally, yes. I think CC's been a ticking time bomb with his knee for a while, and maybe at the end of the year I stop being as confident in him. But look, you're not going to have five number one starters. He was pretty good the past couple of years, which, hey, give him credit, I'd written him off 3 or 4 years ago. And it's really hard to fault any starting pitcher for 1 year, $8 million. That's become really cheap for a starter. And there's value in saving some money in a starting pitching spot.
And the Yankees need lots of starting pitching. The Yankees have currently on the roster, healthy, ready to go next season. They have Luis Severino and Masahiro Tanaka before they re-sign CC Sabathia, right? And so no matter what, we're going to be talking about free agents for the rest of this episode, but no matter what you say right there, like, there's going to have to be some, like, multiple free agents starting pitchers signed if you don't include Sabathia, and then you get one for $8 million. Sabathia has been effective for the last couple of seasons. He has obviously been a diminished version of himself, but even that version is pretty good, right? We've got WAR totals of 1.5, 1.5, and 1, all in relatively small playing time. I'm sorry, a 3.2, 2.8, and 2.3, all in kind of small playing time. You know, the Statcast number suggests that he's good at getting weak contact, so he's not just getting lucky. And I think in the modern age where bullpens are predominant, it's okay to have a starting pitcher go 150 innings with a mid-3s ERA. That's an asset.
Yeah, doesn't it remind you exactly of the Brett Gardner 1.75 signing? Because what he was. And that's okay, though, because Brett Gardner's better than most fourth outfielders and CC's better than most fifth starters.
And I think that's even selling CC a little bit short, right? So CC Sabathia this season had a 3.65 ERA in 150 innings, about the same number of innings last year, 3.69 ERA. Even if he's probably going to be a little bit worse than that as he ages, think about a guy like James Paxton. So James Paxton is a Yankee target. We have heard on MLB trade rumors today that the Yankees are interested in signing him. You know what he pitched last year? He pitched 160 innings with a 3.76 ERA in a worse ballpark, in a better ballpark for pitching. I mean, he's probably a little bit better than that in terms of like true talent, but I mean, Sabathia was better last year than James Paxton, at least before you look at defensive independent metrics. So I think that he's about as good as you could possibly get for $8 million, and he allows the Yankees to go out and sign other better players. I think the other interesting thing is that, you know, if the Yankees end up going to like a 6-man rotation, like some teams are doing, or whatever, Sabathia just takes a vacation for 2 months in the middle of the season, it's not going to hurt the roster construction that much. They can't be counting on Sabathia to pitch 200 innings because that's not going to happen. And so, you already will hopefully have a plan B in place for him.
Yep.
All right. So let's move on. So we talked about free agents. We're going to play the free agent game called Spend the Steinbrenner's Money. The Yankees have a lot of money to spend this offseason. How much money is debatable. We are going to assume right now the Yankees are looking at a $230 million payroll of next year. That's about a $40 to $45 million increase from last year. We're using luxury tax payroll, not actual payroll. So like Giancarlo Stanton's real salary doesn't really come through with this. 230 is what we're aiming at. They currently have committed, including the CC Sabathia signing for next year, about $119 million for the payroll. They also have about a projected arbitration class of about $45 million for next year. So we'll assume that they get that arbitration class at $45 million, and we'll also assume that for now they don't re-sign any of their existing players or extend any of their recent players. So we're going to be talking about contract extensions in a future podcast. For now, we assume that's not an option. That means the Yankees have about $66 million to spend in this offseason on the rash of free agents. So we have taken, and the spreadsheet will be available in show notes, and I'll put it out on Twitter. We have taken The average annual value predicted by the MLB trade rumors, free agent predictions for all of their top 50 players. And we are going to give each of us, Sean, both Scott and I, a budget for that $66 million. And Scott and I are going to assemble a free agent team, or at least a set of Yankee free agents, based upon that budget. So, for example, Bryce Harper has a total cost of $420 million over 14 years projected. That's a $30 million average annual value. That's what he would cost in this game. AJ Pollock has a $60 million cost at 4 years. That's $15 million, etc. Any player that is not predicted on that list, we are assuming is a one-year, $4 million contract. Scott, does that sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, Scott, I'm going to go first. My team, the team that I've selected, we each brought out two teams to the podcast, is the Bryce Harper team. Last week, we talked about how much I like Bryce Harper. This team has Bryce Harper being signed, along with Patrick Corbin, Trevor Cahill, and Estrubel Cabrera. Here's my logic for a second. In my mind here, Bryce Harper is now a first base DH type for the season. Maybe he emergency fills in the outfield, but he shouldn't be getting that much time in the outfield, especially now that the Yankees have re-signed Brett Gardner. Patrick Corbin is now your number two starter behind Luis Severino. He's really good. He's a lefty. Might even be better than Severino at this point. We'll see. Trevor Cahill now becomes your number four starter. I think he had an underrated season last year. I think Trevor Cahill is one of the best values in this draft. He's one of these players that feels like he's been around for a long time because he has. But he really reinvented himself last season when he came up from the minors. And he had with San Diego a 3.69 ERA, and with Oakland this year a 3.76 ERA. Pretty good going deep into the games. I think he could be actually a pretty useful signing for the Yankees. So, Scott, what do you think about my team? Again, I'm going to read that team back again. Harper, Corbin, Cahill, and Estrubel Cabrera, who's your fill-in for Didi Gregorius.
It's pretty good. Trevor Cahill, I liked a lot early last year. He fell off a cliff a bit when he came back from the DL, but if you have a rotation where you have, in addition to Severino, Tanaka, and Sabathia, Corbin's pretty reliable, it's okay to have Cahill as a bit of a roll of the dice, because after all, that's why he's projected to be $10 or $11 million. So it's a bargain if he pitches like he did before the injury. Yeah, 2 years, 22, they're projecting. I think it's pretty good. Estrubel Cabrera he's one of the people I think that MLB trade rumors didn't predict. So we penciled in $3 million, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's a bargain because he, you know, has some ups and downs, but he's not much worse than some of the guys who are around $8 to $10 million, just to pick. Donaldson's projected at 1 year 20 and hasn't been much. And then, yeah, I guess DJ LeMahieu, Brian Dozier expected to be 9 or 10. I think Cabrera at 3 is a bargain compared to them. And how much did that exactly come to?
That came to exactly, as I bring the spreadsheet back up, I have $500 million left in my budget.
So you spent 65.5?
Yeah, so we're just going to give Aaron Judge a raise.
Sounds good.
All right, so Scott, give me your first roster.
Okay, so my first is going to be, just as you did the Harper and not Machado option, because last week you did the Harper argument, I did the Machado argument. I'm going with the Machado, not Harper argument. And here's what I came up with. Machado, Patrick Corbin, same other spot. So in a sense, we're spending 51 and a half on one of the big free agents and Patrick Corbin. Maybe we can talk about Corbin. I then decided they need another starter. I went with, for about the same price as Cahill, I went with Hyunjin Ryu, who's projected at 11 a year for 3 years. And then I went with Adam Warren for 1 year, $3 million.
Ah, come on.
What?
I'm just not a big Adam Warren fan right now.
I'm a big Adam Warren fan. So, okay, so the thought here is that Rue is often hurt, but when he's not hurt, he's outstanding. And, you know, he's kind of like Cahill in that way, so it makes sense they're about the same price. And then Adam Warren, the thought I've always had about him is this. Is I know he's not a spring chicken, but he's only 31. He seems like he's been here forever. He's expected to be $3 million because, like Cabrera, he's one of those unsigned guys. And Adam Warren, in his career as a starter, he's had 21 starts and a 380 ERA. Adam Warren still throws four pitches. I don't think Adam Warren ever lost the ability to be a multi-pitch starter. And when he was a starter, he didn't get worse than the third time through the order. He didn't get worse if pitches 76 through 100. I think the only reason Adam Warren hasn't been a starter is just that the Yankees have been a good team and had five better starters or higher ceiling starters. I think that he's insurance. So if the Yankees have, look, they have Severino Tanaka. We both agree add Corbin. I add Rue as the fourth starter. I think it's fair to give Warren a shot. Or if Domingo Herman looks outstanding, make it Herman. But then Warren's the guy to bring in if a rookie falters or CeCe's hurt or Rue or, in your case, Cahill's hurt. I think he has more potential as a starter, so I'd keep him as a long man until then. So that was the only thought there.
Let's talk about Corbin really quickly. So Patrick Corbin is projected at a pretty hefty contract at the moment by MLB Trade Rumors. 6 years, $129 million. That's $21.5 million per year. Do you think the team that signs Patrick Corbin, if they sign them for that amount of money, will regret it?
I don't think so, because the catch about Corbin is that he had a great year last year, and he's had no other years like that at age 28. Because last year he hit 11.1 strikeout per nine, which is outstanding. There's no other year where he was out of the 7 and 8s in strikeouts per nine. So he was a moderately low strikeout guy, or moderate to low before this year, and suddenly 11.1. But they're increasingly examples of teams getting good at helping guys develop a pitch, and his slider apparently went off the charts. Which is the same thing that Ulys Chacin accomplished for the Brewers. He went from being a washed-up, broken-shoulder guy whose fastball left him to a guy whose slider is amazing. So I think with Corbin, it seems real. And also, when he was young, he did have a couple years in 2013 and 2015 when he had a ERA in the mid-3s and a FIP that corresponded to that. So he's been close to this good in the past. So he's not a guy who's been garbage till this year. He's just a guy who's been adequate and took it to the next level based on a genuinely good new pitch. So I buy it.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of better options out there at the moment. And the Yankees desperately need pitching at the moment. And I think it just makes sense to add him to the team in that case. I like the Manny Machado build for a lot of the reasons why that we're talking about Machado fitting in to this team. The Yankees both have a problem where they would like to have somebody good cover for Didi Gregorius, who's not Ronald Torres, for a lengthy part of the season. So they need to go out and get somebody. On my team, I had to go and sign a free agent, Estrubel Cabrera, for 1 year, $3 million. And I'm not convinced that that's what he's actually going to cost, you know, in the real world. He might be more expensive than that. He might be a multi-year deal. And then you're slotting, you know, Gleyber Torres from second to short. You're doing a lot of things just to cover for Didi Gregorius. Whereas on your team, Manny Machado is that guy and then bounces Miguel Andujar out of the way once Didi Gregorius gets back or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that was a key point in our discussion last week, is that Harper and Machado are probably about the same money. If you sign Harper, you still need a middle infielder. If you sign Machado, you don't really need an outfielder because you still have Stanton, Judge, and Hicks in center with Gardner as the backup, and Clint Frazier is sort of ready. So you need a lefty bat somewhere as the catch, and that's something I didn't really fully grapple with, I got to admit, with my team. I didn't sign a lefty and just decided to shoehorn him in somewhere.
So let's move on to my fun team. So here's the fun team. I'm going for the crazy team. This is the team where the Yankees signed both Harper and Machado. At that point, they have $6 million left over, and I'm spending that on a two-year, $4 million deal on Kurt Suzuki. Suzuki replaces Austin Romine, which I really want to do. I had about six different teams where I had signed Kurt Suzuki in my little practice runs, and the Yankees go all in on hitting, so there are no pitchers right here. I presume with this lineup, line out that I trade Miguel Andujar for pitching. So there's some acquisition of pitching at some point in there. I don't know which pitching. I don't know how good the pitching will be, but I do trade him for pitching. Let me tell you why I actually think this is a great option if the Yankees can do it. All right. Number one, the Yankees already have a stacked team. Like, they have players at most of their positions who are all pretty good, and they don't need to go out and, like, fill out their team. They have a ton of money to spend, but they don't need to buy, like, six players in order to do it. They just need to buy a few players. Number two, I think this is the best, like, extra wins you could acquire with given this money. I'm pretty sure as I look at this, there's no other way to pack this many wins onto the next year's New York Yankees team, no matter what you do, right? Because your one replacing, you know, Harper, I'm saying first base, right? Basically a black hole at first base at the moment. We have no idea what's going on there. You get to save the Didi Gregorius situation if Machado plays there, or Machado goes to third and becomes, you know, much more valuable than he is at short. So I think there's a lot going on there. And I really think that replacing Romine with Suzuki is one of those little things that you can do to improve the team cheaply. So Romine is probably a replacement level player next year, maybe below replacement level player. Suzuki is like a two-win player at this point in his career. He's got really good contact skills still. He's actually had a sneaky good last two or three offensive seasons for the Braves. And, you know, I don't think he's a great defensive catcher, but he's certainly not an embarrassment back there. He's a leader. He's a veteran. If Gary Sanchez has like another catastrophe or gets hurt or something, he is a perfectly capable fill-in for Sanchez long-term, even if, you know, for a long part of the season, even if in a way that Austin Romine certainly is not. And he's essentially that's essentially a two-win improvement or so over Romine for $4 million, which is just excellent.
I both think this is a terrible idea, but really, really hope they do it. So speaking
it'd be so
as
much
a
fun. It'd be so it much so fun. Much fun.
Speaking as a, so A, it'd be fun because it'd be like when the Olympic basketball team was like Michael Jordan and everybody else in the NBA destroying Croatia or something. So it'd be kind of like an all-star team. I also, as a Rockies fan, I really enjoy seeing a 12-9 game. It's just a lot of fun. Yes, it's longer, but there's always something going on. There's always someone on base. There are three home runs a game. And every game would be like a Coors Field game. So I really like it. I don't know who pitches, but I think, yes, you're onto something in that if you sign Harper Machado, you trade Andujar, but you know who else you trade is Clint Frazier. And you make each of them a deal for a pitcher. Yeah. Because if you have Harper at even first base and those guys in the outfield, you know, you still have Voit and Bird to bounce around DH with Harper and first base.
And Judge are playing every day in the outfield in this scenario.
Yeah. Right. So I think you still – and you could have Harper fill in if somebody's hurt in right field or something. So I think you have so many bats around that you won't lose much even if Frazier becomes a good player. And I think he maybe can get a good starter. So I think this could be – it's definitely a lot of fun, and I hope they do it. It could be awful, but if – and Cashman's good at this. I mentioned last week when I – you know, we were talking about signing these guys. Signing free agents – not only lets you have good guys, but it lets you trade the people who would have used those spots. If Cashman can trade Endura for one solid pitcher and Frazier for another. And yeah, he'd pack other guys with each of them. So the trade would be something like Andujar and some A-ball righty power arm for starting pitcher. And then Clint Frazier and a righty A-ball power arm, because those guys grow on trees. I think they if they could land two pitchers, that would just be killer use of the free agent market, your money, and your prospects. So yeah, maybe.
And I want to say that in this scenario, Bryce Harper is my leadoff hitter, which would just be fantastic, followed up by Judge Stanton and Gary Sanchez. So, you know, this team could work out pretty well. All right, Scott, give me your more boring team that includes neither Judge nor Harper nor Machado.
Yeah, this is the eat your vegetables option where they don't get Harper, they don't get Machado. We're sad. Every call-in show that would have gone on tirades about how neither of these malcontents is worth $400 million is now going to go on the tirade and say, why didn't they use their money? So can't please everybody. But I think this is both the eat your vegetables option, but I think this is almost the most likely thing for them to do. Because I actually don't think they're going to sign Harper Machado. Or there's also a decent possibility that if they try, hey, a lot of teams want those guys. And the Yankees could decide, we like Harper Machado. I'm not sure they do. But they could decide that they're not worth $400 million. So I would say that this is what I think is almost most likely. Corbin for $21.5 million. Then Michael Brantley for $15 million. Hyunjin Ryu for $11 million. And then Daniel Murphy for $10 million. And Adam Warren for $3 million. And Nate Carnes for $3 million. So it's sort of sign everybody. You're almost dumping most of the bench. But here's the thought. Okay, the rotation is Corbin and Rue as starters 4 and 5 after Seve, Tanaka, Cece. I think that's a really good rotation if you have Rue. I actually like Rue better than J.A. Happ. And I know Happ's been great, but Happ is 36 years old. A great 36-year-old is not likely to be good for years 2 and 3 and maybe not even next year. So I just am not a believer in the 3-year contract I'm convinced J.A. Happ is going to get. and he's predicted a $16 million a year. I think Happ is going to get more. I think he's going to get 18 to 20 a year. Only question is whether it's 2 years at 20 each or 3 years at 18 each, I think. I really think Rue is potentially the bargain in the market. And then here's what I did with Brantley and Daniel Murphy. They are both good hitters, not outstanding hitters. Murphy used to be, but now he's just good. They both kill righties. They have huge splits. They kill righties. So if you work in Brantley against righties, because Hicks will be injured every other week, or, you know, just work him in and give – you work Brantley the outfield and give somebody a DH day, I think you can work in Brantley against all the righties and even maybe some lefties. And then if you work in Murphy against most guys but definitely all the righties, and he's old and brittle, so you give him time off and he'll be better, I think you suddenly redress the Yankees' entire weakness against righties. So suddenly they have no weakness against, you know, the tough righty. So you have a pretty strong rotation, I think. You have no holes in the lineup really anymore, assuming somebody comes through at first base. But Murphy played a not awful first base last year. He had a learning curve, to be sure. And what happened is Murphy came back from a bad knee and was terrible at second base. But I think he never maybe got fully healthy. I think there's a chance he's competent at second base. But if not, you bounce him between second and first. Or if he's not good at second, you put him at first. And then as far as other pitchers, Nate Kearns is a guy I don't know a lot about. He's just, there's certain guys who are just these sad sacks. Nate Kearns, for his career, he's 30 years old. He's only pitched 310 innings. But damn it, the guy strikes out 9.3 per nine almost entirely as a starter. He doesn't have a terrible walk rate. This guy should be a frontline starter, and he's gotten hurt, and he hasn't had opportunities, and they bounce him into the bullpen 1 year. He's bounced from team to team. But also in the minors, he struck out 10.3 per nine. I mean, this is a guy with, you know, serious ability to miss bats that you need, and his control is okay. He's obviously a high volatility guy, but I think if you sign him and Warren, you've got some real depth. Warren's the guy who's not going to be an ace, but I think there's an extremely high chance Warren is competent as a starter if someone gets hurt. At the very least, he's a good arm in the bullpen. And same for Kearns, just that Kearns is more like he could be a number two or three starter, but he also could never start a major league game. So I think you've added some real rotational depth given CeCe's age, Rue's injury possibility. So I think you've added a ton of depth with the no Harper, no Machado option, and you redress the problem of needing lefty hitters.
I think Michael Brantley is the really interesting player here, and one of the great bargains on this list, right? So Michael Brantley's contract projection right now is 3 years, $45 million. Very, very reasonable at $15 million per year. It's kind of like one of those contracts that like Nick Swisher got back in the day, of that level. But Michael Brantley has a really high ceiling. I mean, it's hard to remember, but you know, Michael Brantley, because he had, I think, a shoulder injury that really really gave him a lot of problems for a couple of years. Michael Brantley was an MVP candidate not that long ago. This season, he hit 309, 364, 468. You know, he's not a great defensive player anymore, but he's not a bad defensive player by any means. And you know, this year he was coming off, you know, 2 years of major injury and could really, really turn it back on, you know, this next year after he's shaking the rust off and is a little bit healthier. I think he's a great pick, and I think you're right. I think as far as left-handed batters, except for Bryce Harper, he's the best left-handed batter on the market. And it's not even really close. Like, it's, you know, there's, you know, your other option is pretty much Daniel Murphy, and we'll talk about him in a second. You know, he's got his flaws. So I think that's a really interesting way to go, and I could totally see them doing it. My biggest problem with Brantley, though, is that he blocks Clint Frazier without solving a long-term problem. So Michael Brantley is not your long-term left fielder. In fact, he might be your left fielder for maybe one more year. After that, maybe he's a DH. Maybe he's, you know, the aging curve starts to take into effect. Or if he's your left fielder, he's not a very good one. Whereas, you know, if you were to put Bryce Harper there, or essentially move Giancarlo Stanton there for Bryce Harper, you know, then you have a long-term option at that position. And I'm a little bit concerned about that. I wouldn't want to block Clint Frazier just for somebody like that. Let's talk about Daniel Murphy, though, which is also interesting. And on your team, is Daniel Murphy your primary second baseman while Didi Gregorius is out, or are you planning Ronald Torres there?
Daniel Murphy is my primary second base, with a nod to the fact that it's possible he shows up in spring training and is just unplayable there. But the thought is that he was not a great, but he was an adequate second baseman before the knee injury last year. And what I remember last year distinctly is that his comeback from knee injury was long delayed. And what I suspect is by the time they brought him back, they just accepted, okay, you're not getting the mobility back right now. We're just bringing you back anyway. So I have some confidence, though. It went well. And if you can hit this well, clearly you don't have totally destroyed knees. So I suspect that he'll be back to being his usual, like, subpar but basically adequate defensive self. But I get that there's some real risk there. So it's a risk. It's kind of like your pitching staff with Harper and Machado.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my problem is that he was a below replacement level player last year because of the terrible defense. Right. And I'm with you. I think there's a pretty good chance that he could get better, but I still think he'll be a very bad defensive second baseman. I love him as a first baseman. And I think that, you know, other than signing Bryce Harper, I think he's actually pretty likely to be the Yankees' first baseman next year. I also think that there's a good chance that the MLB trade rumors contract evaluation is a little bit low on him, right? So right now he's at 2 years, $20 million. I wouldn't be shocked if some team wants to take a gamble on somebody who's, you know, got the near batting title champion kind of credentials that Daniel Murphy has. Or did he win a batting title? No, he didn't. He came close.
But here's one other argument for Murphy, though, is that the Nationals last year, they have Scherzer, who's great, but Strasburg was, you know, hit and miss an injured part of the year, and some of their rotation was terrible. The Yankees have a lot of high strikeout pitchers, especially if you build out the rotation with Corbin, with Rue, or with Cahill in your case. It's possible that every starter in the Yankees other than CeCe has a strikeout rate of like 10 per 9 or over 9 per 9, certainly. So I don't know that the Yankees get that many ground balls, because even when Tanaka's strikeout rate drops a little bit, he's a fly ball pitcher. Same with Seve. So if the Yankees are basically a strikeout and fly ball team, I think a bad defensive second baseman hurts you less than most teams. And, you know, you keep Tyler Wade or somebody on the team. I think Daniel Murphy you might take out in the eighth inning for a defensive replacement in some games. So this, of course, depends on Murphy not being as unplayable at second as he was last year. But if he graduates to merely inadequate at second, not unplayable, I think he would be maybe a negative one WAR defensively. Second baseman costs you 10 runs a year on most teams, maybe only minus 7 runs, 0.7 WAR on the Yankees. Any defensive replace him, and if you give him a day or two off a week, I think a guy who's old with bad knees is maybe going to be better at second if he's not trotted out there every day. That's some of the thought. It's maybe optimistic.
And the hope is that once Di Gregorius gets back, this problem becomes a non-problem, right? It becomes a real advantage that you could have maybe Daniel Murphy as a part-time bench player on your team. So I think it's a very interesting option. So we've just talked about our teams here a little bit. This is kind of a fun little way to kind of think about what the Yankees might do this offseason. I'm curious, what are your takeaways from this process? Like, what have we learned from this little game?
I'd say two things. One, we already hit, so we won't belabor it much, which is that I love Harper. I find him more fun than Machado in some ways, but if you sign Harper, not Machado, you need infielder. If you sign Machado, not Harper, you don't need an outfielder. So it's tougher to construct a team. I think you saw this with Harper rather than Machado. But the bigger picture that falls into is, even with the Yankees' money, I think you can't solve all the problems. You need two decent starters. You ideally need two lefty bats, and you need an infielder. It's pretty hard to solve all those at once. And maybe you even need a first baseman. We didn't talk about that much, but unless you get Harper and move him at first, then you're trusting Voit and Bird. So even with Yankee money and the depth of the team they had, and they're an excellent team with depth and money, you just can't solve every problem perfectly. So you got to figure out which thing you're going to go in a wing and a prayer on. Maybe the answer is you trust Daniel Murphy at second. Maybe the answer is you sign all the hitters like you did and you hope that you can trade youth for starting pitching. Or maybe you give up and say, screw it, we can hit lefties, we don't need a lefty hitter. But you got to figure out which thing you're going to give on, I think.
I think that's right. Let me add a couple of things on top of that. So, number one, the Yankees are not re-signing David Robertson, at least if he's anywhere near the price that MLB trade rumors project him at. I love David Robertson. I want him to stay on this team. I like him for a lot of reasons. As a fan, he's a connection to Mariano Rivera that I love, my favorite player of all time, and David Robertson was schooled by Mariano Rivera, succeeded him, etc. I want him on this team. However, he's projected at 3 years, $33 million, at $11 million for a relief pitcher who's good but aging and, you know, probably replaceable. I just don't think that you can justify that. In fact, I tried to find budgets where I signed, you know, spent real money on relief pitching, even money like 2 years, $6 million per year on Bud Norris. And that's actually kind of tough. It's not, you know, if the Yankees are going to sign a relief pitcher this offseason, I think it's going to be along the lines of someone like Justin Wilson, who's not ranked among the top 50, and so it'd be a pretty cheap signing. I think Adam Warren's not a bad option there, too, just because he's cheap. And yeah. If the Yankees want some more depth at relief pitching, you got to be cheap.
Yeah, and you notice that neither of us really signed relievers. I mean, in my no Harper, no Machado, I just kept adding cheap arms like Nate Carnes and Adam Warren, but we're giving up on any serious money relievers because, again, you can't sign everything. And I think implicitly we decided that as between starting pitchers, needing starting pitchers, needing lefty hitters, needing an infielder, the easy one to give on is not worth any reliever who's $10 million a year. The guy I wanted to work in and didn't quite fit in any of my teams is Yusei Kikuchi from Japan. He's 20 years old.
I don't know much about him.
I don't think anybody does because he wasn't a highly touted import. So I've heard so many things that together don't make sense. On the one hand, they say he doesn't have the stuff of the recent top Japanese pitchers who came over, Tanaka and Darvish. On the other hand, he's a lefty with multiple pitchers who throws 98. I don't know how it's true that he has worse stuff. And then on the other hand, I heard that he's not as desirable as others, but he's a 27-year-old, and he's expected to sign in MLB trade rumors for 6 years at $42 million, so $7 million a year. Honestly, I sort of left him off because I didn't know what to do with that. I don't think that makes any sense to say he'll sign for that little because I think there are two possibilities for Yusei Kikuchi. If he's a lefty who throws 98 with half decent control, he is at worst a really appealing reliever, and the Yankees need a lefty reliever. And at best, a 27-year-old with an arm, try him out as a starter. So I sort of didn't know what to do with him, so I left him off. And I just don't believe those numbers make any sense as him getting that little. But boy, is he appealing as a lefty who, you know, the Yankees could use in the bullpen and cost-controlled starter. So, yeah.
Some other observations. Other players that I think would be interesting in a vacuum, but unless the plan A's and plan B's don't work out, I don't see the Yankees re-signing. I don't see Andrew McCutchen being re-signed. At 3 years, $45 million, it's $15 million per year. It's a very expensive player, and I don't think he really benefits the Yankees or complements the Yankees really in any way. Another player that I considered, and at the price that MLB Trade Rumors has him, I do not think it's possible, is Josh Donaldson. I think Donaldson's a really interesting player to sign on a one-year deal, even if it's for a lot of money, and could either play third base or play first base or something like that, or DH. He's very good. We know that Josh Donaldson could be an MVP caliber hitter and is only coming off a single one down year. But at that price, I don't think it's particularly doable. A couple of other players that I think are targets the Yankees will consider. I think they're going to strongly consider J-Hab. You're right that he's expensive. 3 years, $16 million per year, right? That puts him as like in the top seven or eight, in terms of projected salary. I think he's really good. I think he is the best starting pitcher that won't cost like a prohibitive amount of money. And I love Patrick Corbin. I do think he's overvalued at 6-129 after just one good year. I think there's a very high bust potential there. And the bust potential is just not there for J-Hab. It's just much, much smaller. A couple of other interesting players that I hate to say it. I'm going to say a couple of names. I'm not crazy about these names, but I'm going to say them anyway. Joe Kelly at 3 years, $9 million per year. It's not a bad contract. That's really not a bad contract. If you're going to sign a relief pitcher, he's one of the more reasonable ones out there. Brad Bock at 2 years, $6 million per year is a really interesting projection, and I considered him a little bit. There's not a lot of low-end starting pitching. There's no cheap innings eater that I can see the Yankees going out and getting. Lance Lynn is the closest you could come to that, and that he's at 2 years, $8 million per year. It would not shock me to see them re-sign Lance Lynn because of that. They need the starting pitching. They need someone to throw innings, and Lance Lynn will at least throw innings. I'm just not crazy about that deal.
Yeah, let me mention four guys I really thought seriously about and I think would be really interesting choices. I agree on Hap. I had a couple of variants where I worked him in. I think he could be, of all the starting pitchers, he could be the best for next year. But I kind of like having Corbin cost controlled. He's only 29. Hap, I just fear that, yes, he got better, but in younger years he wasn't as good. He got better. I think he could just fall off a cliff, but maybe I'm totally wrong. I'll be happy if they sign him. Neither of us talked about Dallas Keuchel, and I agree on that. I think there's
evidence. Yeah, I do not want any part of Keuchel.
He had that one great year, and there's plenty of evidence he's declining in his stuff, his strikeout rate. So I think he's going to get a long contract, and it'll be a bad idea.
You also talked about the Yankees' infield defense earlier this year, and Dallas Keuchel needs a really good infield defense. I actually think, look, in a vacuum, I'd love to have that Dallas Keuchel on my team. He's an innings eater. He had a 3.74 ERA this year, but yeah, not with the defense that we have right now.
Not if you sign Daniel Murphy and Levan Duhard third base. Can you imagine an extreme ground ball pitcher with those guys? Oh my God.
If you're going to do that, you better sign Keuchel first.
There are two guys that I think would be fun to sign. The one possibility would be kind of like signing Harper Machado. Just go for the obvious. Just Nelson Cruz. I mean, just go for a thumper.
As a DH?
Yeah, just put him at DH. He doesn't quite fit in the lineup construction, but if you decide, let's say the Yankees lose out on the best pitchers, which is possible, by the way, because everything we're reading is that Hap has a zillion suitors and Corbin has a zillion suitors. Maybe the only way to go is to have Sabathia, and because, you know, again, we sort of are spoiled first world problems guys as Yankee fans, because the whole premise of this exercise is they get whom they want, they just have to pick, which is generally a good assumption. But, you know, they're not dumb, the Yankees. I think Cashman might balk when he sees what Corbin and Hap cost. So in that case, maybe you sign Nelson Cruz, who's just a thumper, and you figure you'll trade for pitching. The other guy who I think might actually make a lot of sense is Jed Lowrie. Because Jed Lowrie was adequate at second base, and he was one of those guys who, when he was younger, he looked like a tweener who might never make it because he was inadequate at shortstop. He hit, but not quite enough to make up for it, and he was hurt a lot. So he looked like one of those guys. Do you remember Scott Sizemore a couple years ago? Just a guy he had talents. He had major league talents in some ways, but was never going to make it out and have a good career. But the last 2 years, he has missed he's basically missed no time and had a 120 OPS plus. In the last 2 years, he's at 8.8 WAR combined. It's entirely possible that he has more WAR than Bryce Harper next year if Harper is bad defensively at some position. I don't want to overstate that point, but
he's better than Bryce Harper this year. I mean, it's totally legitimate, I think.
Right, and he's expected to be $10 million a year. Now, he's not young, but
34.
Right, but I think that
he's going to be 35 next year.
Right, but his second base is less demanding. He grades out as a good second baseman, not just adequate. I think that by moving him off short and he got healthy and whatever, I think he's a sleeper to actually fill the gap really, really well and cheaply. So I picked Murphy.
He's a switch hitter, too, which helps.
Yeah, so he's the same money as Murphy. So the interesting question is him versus Murphy at second. It's entirely likely that Lowry's better. I just went with Murphy as the pound righties option, and I had some fit of optimism. What I don't know is when teams sign a guy like Murphy, or consider it, or they talk to Harper about first base, do they actually have a discreet tryout with a guy, or is that insulting to the guy? I wish I knew that. I suspect that if they do it, they wouldn't tell us, because it'd be seen as demeaning, or if it goes badly, there would be a understanding that we never talk about this in public. So I think that signing Murphy's contingent on them doing a deep dive into just the video of how he looked in September at second base, and also maybe an offseason tryout. But if Murphy is really unplayable, I think Lowrie's a great option at second.
I agree. I think that's an interesting player to have once you get Di Gregorius back, because presumably it would be Gleyber Torres at short, Jed Lowrie at second for a while. And then he kind of gets bumped to, like, first or DH or, you know, we don't really know where he goes. And that's kind of a good thing. Like, he's a really good player to have, you know, just kind of lying around. And, he's played a lot of positions, so he's kind of flexible there. I could even see him taking over at third once DD gets back.
Yeah, like, over his career, he grades out as average at third. Now, last year he was bad, but only in 14 games, so it's hard to know what to do with that. I think that, though, you don't have to be that great a third to be better than Miguel and Duhar at third base. So, you know, there are also options like late in the game, if you have a ground ball reliever in, you know, kind of like they did in the playoffs, you put Lowrie moving from second to third and you put in Tyler Wade at second or something. So there are interesting versatility options if you have Lowrie.
Some players that I want no part of Andrew Miller. Andrew Miller at 3 years, $27 million. That is nuts. He was bad last year. He is old. He's pitched a lot of innings. I wouldn't be shocked if Andrew Miller comes out of the gate and becomes a really good reliever. But at that price, the Yankees can do a lot better.
Guy I want no part of is Adam Ottavino. I love him.
I was going to ask you about him.
He's on the Rockies. When he's good, he throws a 95-mile-an-hour fastball with movement and this slider that moves in a way that defies the laws of physics. He literally he has terrible control. The way he makes up for it is he tries to throw everything down the middle of the plate. And when it hits the middle of the plate, it's still not usually that hittable. And when he misses, sometimes it's on the corner or sometimes it's 3 feet outside. But it would basically be like having a second Dellin Betances. He's almost exactly like Betances in how unhittable and he is while having, at best, sketchy control. And at worst, he'll throw three wild pitches in one outing. And I think a team can have one of that guy. Like, you can't have two of that guy on the team. And it's heartbreaking because I like him. He's from Brooklyn. He actually comes across extremely intelligent on MLB, if you've ever seen him give commentary. So I think he's an exciting player, but I think you can't have a, there's a definite diminishing marginal value of number of Betances as you have in the team. I think the optimal number is one. If you have a, picture this way, if you had a whole bullpen of Betances, who the hell do you bring in with the bases loaded or, you know, in that situation? I think you just can't have multiple guys because there'd be some game where the two arms that are fresh in the bullpen are Betances and Ottavino, and oh my God, what do you do with two men on base? So
yeah, I mean, that was Robertson, right? That's what you're losing right there.
Yeah, kind of. I think Robertson, you know, ended up with a little, his control was just a little better, but yeah, it's kind of like that. You know, you just, and Chapman maybe in some way, you just, and Chapman doesn't have outstanding controls. So the Yankees already are on the edge of having too many awesome arms with bad control.
All right, we're going to wrap up real quick. I want to ask you, what's your prediction? I want you to pick one player on this list you predict that the Yankees will sign.
Corbin.
Yeah, me too. He seems like the obvious one. They wanted him. They wanted him before the season. He had a really good season. You know, the Yankees have lots of money to burn. So not to be boring, I'm not going to pick Corbin. I think that Michael Brantley is a really obvious pick at this point. So I would pick Michael Brantley.
And I
Scott,
think,
thank, yeah, yep, go
one,
for
one
it.
One of the things I'm going to say is I think, like, again, the trades. If you sign Brantley, it means you're trading Clint Frazier, which will make me sad. But if you get a starter for Frazier, that's a good use of Frazier. And the other guy I want to say that just strikes me as a Yankees kind of guy, if they don't get Machado and they don't think they will, doesn't seem like Lowry's their kind of guy. Like, they're not going to take a shot on Murphy. They'll feel like Lowry's steady and they're going to get Gregorius back and they can do something with him. In other words, I don't think Cashman's going to want to pick a garbage option for that infield spot with Gregorius gone, but neither is he going to want to break the bank. And Lowry seems like exactly that kind of tweener whose versatility is also appealing.
I agree with that. I think the guaranteed starting role is the problem for Lowry. Mm. And he seems to really fit in Oakland. So I wouldn't be shocked if he goes back to Oakland. I think the guy who we haven't talked about that I would say the Yankees could sign, like have a pretty good chance of signing, is Marwin Gonzalez. Right? He's a temporary fill-in who becomes a super utility player and it's pretty good in his own right.
Isn't Marwin Gonzalez sort of the player they're hoping Tyler Wade grows up to be when he grows up, by the way? I don't mean anything wrong about that.
Bit. I mean, he's a little more of a power hitter than that. I think he's got some power. He's not just I don't think he has any speed left in him.
Right.
But he's a real true super utility guy. And Houston's really benefited from him over the years. I think that the MLB trade rumors contract projection on him is really high, 4 years, $36 million.
Yeah.
So I didn't have money in my teams when I designed this. I think he'll go for much lower than that. All right, Scott, thank you for joining me. It's been 43 minutes, and we're going to stop right now. Everybody will be back next week. We'll be talking, if there's some news, we'll be talking about the news. If not, we're going to talk about contract extensions. Which players do you want to sign to a contract extension? For this episode, I will put the spreadsheet that we used for this exercise in the in the show notes. So if you want to play along, you can play along. If you want to tweet at us, at BronxBeatBP, I will share anybody's teams that they send to me. Everybody have a great night. We'll see you next week on the next Bronx Beat podcast.